May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable unto you. Amen. Please be seated. I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never be hungry, and whoever believes in me will never be thirsty. It was supposed to be another feeding, or so they thought. At least that's why everyone showed up in today's gospel. But instead of more bread, the crowd got Jesus and conflict. It seems that when we run into Jesus, we often encounter conflict between what is and what might be, between our understanding and his understanding, and between knowing about Jesus versus being in relationship to him. In today's gospel narrative, Jesus challenges the people to consider what kind of bread they are seeking and eating. In other words, the conflict between perishable and imperishable. With this conflict in mind, it didn't take too long before the complaints about Jesus began. He didn't come from heaven. We all know about him. He's Mary and Joseph's boy. The known facts about Jesus weren't exactly squaring up with what Jesus was proclaiming about himself. Can you imagine what the crowd would have been thinking? He's a man. He doesn't look a thing like the bread. When it came to bread, the crowd didn't expect any more than what their ancestors had received, manna in the wilderness. On the surface, the conflict appears to be between Jesus and the crowd. But in reality, the conflict is not outside of them, it is within them. And so often that is how conflict works. It tends to originate from within and gets projected outward and onto another. The conflict for the crowd is not so much about Jesus, but about their frame of reference and the box they have created for him. Jesus is challenging them to step outside of the established, comfortable, and familiar context they have created for themselves. Jesus refuses to be limited by either their understanding or their misunderstandings. He's inviting them to live a new life, a larger life, a life that springs from but is not bound by the past or the context they have created for themselves. He's inviting them to feast on new bread, to be transformed so that they might be imitators of God in a new life that is full of grace and light and truth. The landscape of conflict doesn't stop with our gospel story either. It runs throughout Paul's letter to the church in Ephesus as well. In order to overcome the divisions within the culture and within the church, Paul proclaims that the church is no place for falsehood or hateful speech. As theologian and scholar Brian Peterson rightly states, the church ought to be a place where the truth can be spoken, the difficult truths about our world and about ourselves, and the gracious truth about the God who has redeemed us. That doesn't mean that the truth will be easy, but it does mean that words should never be spoken in malice manipulation, or the intent to slander. This also doesn't mean that truth will never be passionate or even angry. But it does mean that righteous anger can be used as a tool to disrupt and to dismantle travesties and injustices. As Peterson notes, anger is often justified and an appropriate response to injustice. Paul argues that how we communicate with one another and how we serve one another are directly related to how we understand ourselves as followers of Christ. In fact, Paul has the audacity to charge the Ephesians to not just follow Christ, but to imitate God. Paul's message to the Ephesians, Christ embodies a concept of God-centeredness on shared work and loving concern for others. Christ is the model for how to live in humility, hope, love, and forgiveness. Paul understood that when we model our behavior after Christ, we are modeling our behavior after God. We are imitating the divine, and that is best done in community, with people who will speak the truth in love, perhaps sometimes with anger, but never with malice. It is best done side by side, with an eye out for the people who need some help. It is work best shared among friends, among neighbors, and also with people who feel very differently from us. Ultimately, Paul's attempt to recenter, reshift the community's focus back onto Christ was all that mattered. When life is lived strictly and solely from a personal frame of reference, we live spiritually empty lives. We tend to work for manna rather than opening ourselves to receive the gift of the bread of life. No matter how much manna we collect and eat, we can never satisfy ourselves. Manna might fill our tummies, but it leaves our souls grumbling. And sometimes the things done and left undone prevent us from eating the bread of life. Sometimes patterns of thinking, patterns of believing, the ways we might see the world, each other, or ourselves, convince us there is no other bread, and we ought just settle for the same manna that was eaten in the wilderness. At other times, our fears, anxieties, regrets, pain, and losses become so firmly established, we may begin to believe that we are not even hungry. But it doesn't have to be that way. The table of God is soon to be set, and there is a place for each and every one of us. We are not destined to eat manna the rest of our lives. The living bread has come down from heaven to each and every one of us. Every moment of every day, God invites us to eat new bread, to step out of the old context into a new way of living and being. God gives us bread from heaven, knowing that we are hungry. Our conflicts, our restlessness, our deep longings, and our desires to love and be loved are hunger pains by which God draws us close to the heart of Christ, the one who said, "I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never be hungry, and whoever believes in me will never be thirsty." My friends, the resurrected life of Christ is holy bread for holy hunger, the gift of God for the people of God. And thanks be to God. Amen.